Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
He's become really comfortable in our system. He understands it, you know, and I think that Coach Stein and the offensive staff do a good job of continuing to push that, but he's just really level-headed. I think he's got to see some great quarterbacks in front of him with Dylan and Bo, and that experience of seeing how those guys operate day in and day out and what he can be. You know, he's a guy that can make every throw, he's a good decision maker, and really a leader of our team.
That's Dan Lanning, who's celebrating a birthday today. I think he's 39 today. Getting up there, Dan. 39-year-old Dan Lanning talking about Austin Novosad, his backup quarterback? Or is he the starter? Or what is going on with that? Zachary Neal covers the Oregon Ducks. You can find his work, USA Today's Ducks Wire. He also co-hosts a podcast with Jonathan Stewart. It's a fun podcast and a fun listen. Zachary Neal joining us now. Hey, man, what is Dan Lanning trying to do there? Talk about Austin Novosad. Is he just building his guy up, recruiting his roster? What's he doing?
I think he's doing a little bit of both. I mean, what he's really doing is trying to play things as even-keel as possible and not give fans information that he doesn't need to give them, which we've seen him do his entire time at Oregon, and he's really good at it. So, no, I think he's being completely honest, to be straight with you. I think Austin Novosad's a really talented player. Does that mean that he's going to be the starting quarterback, or is it going to be Dante Moore? I have no idea. I think that is an actual competition that's going to play out this spring. You know, are there 100 teams in the nation that Austin Novosad could start for? Probably. Is Oregon going to be one of those? I don't really know. Dante Moore is also a very talented player, so it'll be interesting to see. But I kind of actually do believe Dan when he's saying that, you know, they like what they have in Austin. I think they'd feel comfortable going forward with either player.
I am interested in what you just said, that part where you say you think it's an actual competition, because coaches say that. So are you telling me, like, that you think there's a chance that if Austin Novosad just flat out plays Dante Moore, he's going to start?
I think that, you know, it's nice to believe that it is a meritocracy and, you know, the best player will play. But, you know, there's politics everywhere you go in this world. There's probably politics in Oregon's locker room too, as much as they would say there isn't. But I don't know, we talked to Dante Moore today after practice, and I asked him about that competition. He said, you know what, at this point, it's not a competition in the fact that they're going shot for shot with each other and, like, really competing for that job. They're really just, you know, there's a lot of camaraderie in that room. They're pushing each other to try and be the best that they can be. And, you know, whoever wins, wins in the end. But I don't know, it's tough to say from the outside. We don't have practice access this spring, so I can't tell you how they look. We're not seeing how they look. We got to take their word for it. And what Dan's saying so far is that it's a competition that's close, and both guys look really good.
Have you noticed any changes in the coaching staff and how they're speaking and talking maybe last year at this time to this year at this time? They've lived through a perfect 13-0. They got punched in the nose in the Rose Bowl. You know, has this staff evolved or grown, or is the messaging changing, Zachary?
That's funny you ask that. I was very curious to see going into the spring exactly that, how it changed, what they kind of learned from the Rose Bowl and everything that happened there. So far, I would say no. It seems business as usual. One of the things that I was really curious about is how would they deal with the social media stuff. You know, they put out these videos every week, the Ducks versus them, hyping themselves up, and rightfully so. Like you said, they were 13-0 Big Ten championship. That's a lot to hype up. But after, you know, as you said, getting punched in the nose in the Rose Bowl, how would that be? You know, would they be a dog with their tail between their legs, or would they still be the same old Ducks? So far, it's business as usual. They've kind of said the right thing, saying, hey, we learned from this. You got to learn from your wins and your losses. We're learning from this loss and going forward. I'm curious what it's going to be like once we get into the fall, though. How is it going to be different? How is it going to be the same? That's what really interests me.
I am curious to see how the skill position players around the quarterback will do. Do you have a sense right now at what that wide receiver room will look like? It was so good a year ago. The running backs, you know, how they maybe fortified some of the losses or maybe got better or different in some areas. Can you maybe speak to the receivers in the backs a little bit, Zachary?
Yeah, I think you can almost say this about every position on the roster. They're extremely talented, but extremely unproven at this point. Tosh LaPoy told us a couple weeks ago that this team is lacking, quote-unquote, Oregon experience. They've performed in high school, or they've performed at other, you know, other teams around the nation and come in the transfer portal, but they need to show that they can do it at Oregon. As far as the wide receivers go, you know, Evan Stewart comes back. He's a major, you know, returner from last year. He'll be your, I think, wide receiver one. Around him, there's a lot of unknowns. You know, everyone wants to talk about five-star receiver DeCorian Moore, who was the number one recruit, number one wide receiver in this recruiting class. It sounds like he is absolutely the real deal. You know, everyone you talk to about him says, like, yeah, this kid is incredible. You got other guys like Kyler Casper, Justice Lowe, Malik Benson, a transfer from Florida State. Jurion Dickey, a former five-star player, Gary Bryant, like a fifth or sixth-year returner at this point. There's a lot of guys that can play. We'll see, you know, who steps up and gets into the starting role. And then a running back, you know, Noah Whittington returns for another year. He's, you know what you have with him. Then you bring in Mekhi Hughes from Tulane, who is a back-to-back 1,000-yard rusher. I think he has 22 touchdowns in his career. So he did that at a non-Power 4 school, non-Power 5 conference a couple of years ago. Can he do it at Oregon? I don't know. The tape looks great. He looks like an incredibly talented player. Sounds like he's proving a lot in spring. We'll see what he can do.
Zachary Neal, USA Today Sports, Ducks Wire is our guest, covers the Oregon Ducks. The loss to Ohio State could be explained as, you know, hey, they were rusty. It was a long layoff. Ohio State was peaking. Oregon just didn't have it their day, not their day. Or it could be explained that, you know, maybe Oregon, there was a coaching mismatch there with Chip Kelly and Ohio State staff just using the pieces better and having time to prepare. Where do you stand on that, Zachary, that blend of how much of it was the layoff, how much was coaching?
I think it's a little bit of both, definitely. I want to give credit to Ohio State. I mean, it's an incredibly talented football team, obviously went on to win the championship. Really good coaching. I don't know. I mean, they definitely out-coached Oregon in that game, but Oregon out-coached them earlier in the year, too, so I'm not going to say that they're, you know, a better coaching staff than Oregon. They had the better day that day. I think they also did really good. They did a really good job of taking advantage of the mismatches. They knew that Oregon's secondary was a smaller secondary. You had a bunch of cornerbacks that were 5'9", 5'10", 5'11", against receivers who were 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", with Jeremiah Smith. So you kind of look at the chess match of college football. What did Oregon do this offseason? They got some bigger cornerbacks and defensive backs. You look at their incoming recruiting class, it's a bunch of 6'1", 6'2" cornerbacks and defensive backs. So I know that the rust is also an easy answer. That will never be an excuse that Dan Lanning would give. You know, in their mind, they had more time to prepare. They should have been prepared. I kind of believe that as well. But there are so many things that go into what happened. I think it kind of boils down to it just wasn't their day for a variety of reasons.
Tosh LaPoy on the defensive side, Penn State kind of had its way in the Big Ten championship game, and then came the Ohio State debacle. I know LaPoy wasn't happy with his defensive performance. Personnel-wise, did they get better this offseason?
In some areas, yes, and in some areas they have a lot to prove. I mean, you look specifically at that defensive line, you lose guys like Derek Harmon, Jordan Birch, Jamari Caldwell, and you replace them with a bunch of unproven players. You get Bear Alexander out of the transfer portal from USC. Sounds like he's drawing rave reviews so far. And then you've got a bunch of, you know, underclassmen, redshirt, you know, freshmen, sophomores that were former five stars or high-end four stars that should be good to go once they get their time. But then you look at the secondary, you had Dylan Thienemann, who is maybe, you know, one of the best safeties in the nation behind Ohio State's Caleb Downs. I know this coaching staff thinks that he could be the best player on the roster. He's almost a surefire first-round pick next year's NFL draft. So it's been a long time since Oregon had elite safety play. You probably have to go back to Javon Holland to find someone this good. So there are areas where they got a lot to prove, but other areas where they added pieces where it's like, okay, they really stepped up their game. They're preparing for another big year.
We are talking with Zachary Neal, who covers the Oregon Ducks. Zachary, you know, spring game, I'm going to be watching the quarterbacks and some other things, but what are you looking to learn on the 26th of April. We're 16 days away from that spring game.
I think in general, it has to do with the quarterbacks. I want to see how this offense looks differently than it did last year and the last few years under Will, or a couple years under Will Stein, I should say. Bo Nix and Dillon Gabriel are very mobile quarterbacks, and they're people that can get out and run when they can. Austin Novosad and Dante Moore are not as mobile. I'm not saying that they can't run and they can't scramble when they need to, but, you know, Austin Novosad, I think in his time playing in high school, was not very mobile, wasn't asked to run very much. I don't think he has a single rush in the very limited time he's had at Oregon. And then in Dante Moore's freshman year at UCLA, I think he had, I'm pulling this stat off the top of my head, so excuse me if I'm a little bit off, but I think it was negative 81 rushing yards and with 16 sacks. So it's not like he's getting out and running a lot of read options and scrambling a ton. So how does that, you know, change the offense? How does that change what Will Stein does? Is it more of a pocket passing scheme? Are they taking a lot of shots downfield? How does this affect the run game? That's what I think I'm going to be paying attention to the most.
I am really interested in Oregon's season, and I asked the question the other day, you know, what's making it this year? They'll open with Montana State, and then it's Oklahoma State at home, and then on the road to Northwestern, and then the Civil War game in week four or the fourth game of the season, and, you know, those games at Penn State and home against Rutgers, or excuse me, home against Wisconsin, at Rutgers, at Iowa, at Washington, home against USC. Zachary, what's making it this year in that 12-game regular season for Dan Lanning and the Ducks?
I think if you have any more than one loss, and that loss being to Penn State on the road in Happy Valley, which is a tough game, I think that's considered, you know, subverting expectations. But any more in this new world of college football, I think we kind of all need to reframe what is success in the regular season, because we saw what just happened with Ohio State. They subverted expectations by a large margin in the regular season, and they went on to get hot at the right time and win the championship. So it's kind of more of an NFL model where you can lose maybe a couple of regular season games, and as long as you perform in the playoffs, you'll be fine. So, but I know that Oregon fans should feel confident going into just about every game next year. I think they'll be favored in 90 to 95% of those games. I could see maybe a loss to Penn State just because it's at Happy Valley on the road kind of early in the year. Other than that, though, I would be surprised if Oregon loses many games.
Yeah, you bring up a great point because, you know, we always, in the old world of college football, we look at losses and, you know, a potential loss or two is devastating, right? And, oh, you're out. But Ohio State last year with the expanded playoff showed us that, hey, getting to the playoff is enough as long as you're playing your best football at the right time, and you can overcome a loss or two in the regular season as they lose to Michigan and they lose to Oregon. Those were big losses that had people calling for Ryan Day's head. Do you think the fans understand that yet? Because even as a media member, Zachary, I'm looking at the season and I'm going, oh, they can't lose two. But if they lose two, if they lose the right two games, they still might be a playoff team.
Yeah, I think fans are starting to understand that. I mean, you talk to a lot of Oregon fans, and it sounds like complaining from the outside looking in, but a lot of Oregon fans say, like, yeah, we should have lost that Big Ten championship game. Look at Penn State's path in the playoff versus our path as number one seed. And I know that the playoff committee is considering changing that and considering the seeding and everything. So we'll see what takes place there. But, yeah, in this new age where you're going to have 12 teams get in the playoff, maybe even more, maybe 14, it's not as do or die anymore as if you lose one game, you're out. I think it's kind of transitioned to the NFL model there. It'll be interesting to see once we get more of a sample size, more than a one-year sample size, how that impacts everyone's season, though.
You published a piece on Dante Moore, who sort of is relishing the pressure of trying to be, you know, the next guy, next Dillon Gabriel, next Bo Nix, next Justin Herbert, next Marcus Mariota. How is he handling that?
So far he's saying the right things, which is all you can expect right now. I mean, he said that Dan Lanning has always told him that pressure is a privilege. And Dan Lanning said that to us in the media a lot, too, that, you know, they want this pressure, because if you don't have pressure on you, it means you're not really doing much. You know, the teams that win championships have pressure on them. So Dante Moore, you know, it's kind of interesting to talk to him about this whole thing, because how we started this conversation, is it him? Is it Austin Novosad? I mean, we can put money on it and think that Dante Moore is going to be the starter, but we don't really know until the fall and we don't see anything. So He's doing a good job of saying the right things, saying that, yes, he hears the outside noise. He hears Tez Johnson predicting that he's a Heisman finalist this year. But that doesn't really matter to him right now, because he knows that if he doesn't show up every day and do the work, then none of that's going to happen.
Give me an idea of, you know, the run-up to this spring game. Is Austin Novosad, if he's not the starter, is he a risk to get in the portal? Is that at all on Oregon's radar and how they maybe approach reps in the spring game and, you know, the aftermath of the spring game?
It has to be. I mean, in today's day and age, you're, almost every player on your roster is a risk to get in the portal. I'll tell you, it is no coincidence that Oregon's spring game takes place after the spring portal closes. I mean, that was done strategically. I think that they're one of the, you know, they're kind of leading the charge on scheduling their spring game strategically in that manner around the transfer portal. And that'll change in the future as transfer portal changes. You know, everything in college football is changing by the day. So it's hard to forecast that. But yes, the truth of the matter is, with Austin Novosad, like I said earlier, he could start for 100 teams at least in college football, out of the 134. So if he doesn't get that spot with Oregon, I don't really know what happens. Maybe, you know, it's tough to say when we don't know, we don't see practice, and we need to wait to the spring game to see him. But I know that's something that's on their radar. It's got to be something they're talking about and thinking about, and I'm sure they're planning, not planning accordingly, but like you said, splitting the reps and making sure that he does have a fair shot, because they want to keep both these guys on the roster.
I am wondering if an Oregon player would get in the portal prior to the deadline and then tell Dan Lanning, you know, how the coaching staff would handle that, because I do think there's strategy there. But as it was proven with the player at, you know, I believe left, what was it, Wisconsin or Nebraska, and went to Miami, you know, that judges are saying, hey, the portal really doesn't matter. You can't stop a kid who wants to transfer. But, man, that is fascinating stuff. Zachary Neal, hey, I appreciate you, man. I'll see you down at the spring game.
Sounds great. Can't wait for it.
All right, there he goes. Dante Moore or Austin Novosad? And Oregon's strategy, as Neal points out, to hold their spring game after the portal closes, fascinating. I'm just reading the room, and I do see Dan Lanning giving Austin Novosad some love, and I can't help but think that that is a guy recruiting his own roster, and he's not dumb to do it. Leave it here. Our Big Splash coming up.